Good afternoon, or good morning, or good evening, depending on what time you're listening to this. Welcome to another episode of Required Viewing. I'm your host, Shams, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Zach. Hope everyone is staying safe in these lockdown times, and hope everyone is watching a lot of TV, because I'm sure Zach and I have been doing a lot of that over the last few months. Today, the topic that we want to talk about is reality television. And the reason why Zach and I have actually been avoiding this topic, I think, for ever since we actually started this podcast, we've actually consciously avoided not talking about this because it's a genre which I don't know if we're ashamed of watching or we feel doesn't deserve to be talked about. We can get
Well,
into that
the
later.
title of this podcast is Required Viewing, so.
Right, correct, correct. And we don't think this is not. Require that reality TV is not required viewing. That is correct. However, in these certain times, we have realized that reality TV may not be required viewing, but it may actually only be the only viewing that may be possible. Because of the lockdown, a lot of shows have been on halt in production, and there's a lot of scripted television that's on the back burner, but a lot of channels and distributors have a lot of reality backlog catalog of programming that they've been unleashing. And I think Netflix has had a massive amount of success over the last few months with this reality television. So Zach and I wanted to kind of explore this idea of reality TV because it may become that reality TV is the only required viewing that will be available for anyone. So that's sort of what got us into it, but I think we also want to go deeper into the history of reality TV. And we knew that if we were going to do this topic, it couldn't just be the two of us. So Zach, would you like to introduce our special guest for today?
Yes, absolutely. We are definitely not the experts in this topic, so we thought we'd bring in the big guns for this one. And for those of you who are familiar with me and Shams, you'll know we met at business school, Tepper School of Business at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. And here another great Tepper alumni, and perhaps what may come as a surprise to you, an absolute expert in reality television. I'd like to introduce our special guest, Ben Martin. Welcome to the podcast, Ben.
Yeah,
All right. Thank you, guys. Happy to be here. Happy to talk about TV's trashiest genre with you.
Ben.
Another great day in paradise, and we're right at the pinnacle of peak TV for many of us here. So it's going to be a super exciting next few months if these shows actually get to get filming again and such, you know. But anyway, super glad to be here. Yeah, let's talk reality television.
So one of the first things I want to mention is Shams, you didn't get to see this, but as I was discussing kind of the roughest of agendas that we've ever created for this podcast with Ben earlier, he actually, you know, true to Ben's brand, was taking notes ahead of time, significantly more detailed notes on the topic than anything we've ever come up with maybe the exception of our Best of the Decade list. I think we put a lot of effort into
That
that,
had
but
notes. That definitely
yeah.
had notes.
I think on that, I was just writing down because I was trying to remember all the shows because I figured that I'd watched in some capacity and or knew about just because I knew that, you know, we'd kind of go every which way here and we wouldn't get to all of them. But like, I want to show you on top of that, my wife actually added another 15 on Post-it notes on top of there
Oh
too.
dear.
So we
Oh,
probably have like 75 to 100 shows on this list, and this is mostly just the major ones. We
my
nixed a lot of
God.
the less important ones.
So
So
for those of you who
yeah, this is a big
can't
genre.
see the video, Ben has an entire notepad with additional sticky notes posted on top of it of lined paper with what looks like
Jesus.
70 to 100 reality TV show titles. And I believe from what I saw earlier, they were categorized into almost like a map of the landscape of reality TV. So Ben, could you give us like kind of a brief overview of like what the different pockets are of reality TV? Because I think
Subgenres.
as far as categories go, there seem to be a lot of subgenres, and the ones I think the shows that I had in mind to talk about all kind of fit into one. So you definitely have a much bigger breadth of reality TV knowledge. So give us like a brief overview of like all these categories that you've come up with.
Yeah, sure. I think the big thing that differentiates, to start with, the big thing that differentiates reality TV, right, is the fact that you're relying on the personalities, the talent to say something unscripted and then just filming it and relying on that to produce your content and editing it into whatever it is, right? So the reality shows really run the gamut. They're ones that are close to game shows with like these competition shows, which I knew you and I really enjoy, Zach. We've got the ones where you essentially just film a bunch of people and record what happens, like your traditional Real Housewives or Kardashians or things like that, that people might instigate as like the type of TV show that they don't necessarily want to watch in some capacities. And then there's other ones that are essentially just like that, that if you think about it are sort of the same thing. Like you might see a Pawn Stars or American Pickers. It's just different people who are doing it. You're just filming people doing something. So they really run the gamut. You've got these competition shows, you've got people doing something, you've got, something like the house flipping shows or the cooking shows or variety shows where you just bring a bunch of personalities and rotate them in and out and they talk about stuff. So in terms of like just the categories that I had on here, we've got like the dating shows, we've got the music performance shows, like the American Idols of the world, cooking shows, MasterChef, Hell's Kitchen, stuff like that. I talked about the house flipping shows. We've got shows like Project Runway. It really there's a little bit of everything for anyone, and you don't necessarily, just because it's reality, it just essentially means it's unscripted, and there's probably something out there that's still interesting in this genre.
What do you call the subgenre where it's people finding old junk and trying to make it about history?
You like American Pickers or something like that?
Like everything my parents watch every time I'm home.
I don't know, man. Like, I don't really have a name for the genre here. And there, honestly, I know
there's Storage Wars, yeah. And then like storage, 10 yeah. Wow. Different.
Storage Wars, we, there's another one. Yeah.
Can we talk about Storage Wars? Because I want to
You got like hoarders and stuff. Like it's essentially, it's people doing something, right? Like you got something. And the whole thing is just relying on the personalities of the people on TV anyway, so. You know, even like if you think about it, Antiques Roadshow is essentially a reality show. I mean, it's people talking about something and they're relying on unscripted content.
Yeah, that one came up in my research as well. So I actually looked into, I don't have as many categories as you do, because I was trying to figure out like at the higher level, what are the different types? And I turned to the Emmys, which as Shams knows, and anyone who's listened to our previous episodes know, doesn't always do the greatest job of differentiating different categories of things. Nope. And then kind of leaves it to the creators to just like decide what category it goes in. But I think they did a decent job of splitting reality into three top level categories. So since 2014, they've had a category for outstanding structured reality program, which they define structured as anything that contains consistent story elements that mostly adhere to a recurring structured template. So this would be things like Shark Tank or Mythbusters, Love Is Blind. It's something that is a rinse and repeat kind of format.
I think Amazing Race has run that a few times, right?
Yeah.
So Amazing Race is in a separate category that's considered a reality competition program.
Gotcha. Okay. So even though it's still a serial structure, it's not quite the same.
Yeah. So since 2003, they've been giving out the award for a reality competition program, which is basically anything that any program with a competition element that gives a prize or title, including game shows. And then the other category at that time was just reality or nonfiction program. But in 2014, they split the non-competition category into structured and unstructured. So I already mentioned structured. Unstructured reality program is defined as something that contains story elements driven by the actions of characters and lacking a consistent structured template. So some examples of this would be Deadliest Catch, The Kardashians, Million Dollar Listing, more of the, and I think Antiques Roadshow went into that category as well, where there's not a... It's not a format-driven story. It's a character-driven story. There might be like some clear content or like a subject matter. I think Real Housewives would also fall into this, although it wouldn't
make sense.
Certainly not winning this Emmy anytime soon. Actually, I should have looked at the actual winners. I know by far The Amazing Race has won the most.
They've won tons of times. I can't count how many, but I know that they're one of the popular ones for winning in one of the categories anyway.
Yeah.
So
and I
do they well. So the one thing I would want to push on is like when we say unscripted, that's a very loose term. Right? Because you even said like some of the stuff is sort of scripted, right? And we even know just from confessionals that a lot of the stuff is, it may not be exact, the dialogue may not be written exactly, but it's still staged to happen mm-hmm. a certain way, right? Like Bachelor is a great example of like they literally stage certain things so that certain things happen, right? So I don't know if the Emmy even looks into this, but like, how do we even define what unscripted is when we talk about reality TV?
I mean, I think that it's kind of a fine line in there because there's a lot, even though the confessionals, some of them may be scripted in some cases, or the talent may be fed lines to just, you know, say something off the cuff, or they want to portray a character in a specific way. There is a lot of the scope of the show that ends up getting filmed, especially in these competition reality shows. And I guess, you know, The Bachelor may fall into that category in this particular sense, right? That they give them, they set stuff up. So the primary focus here and a lot of the storylines are still going to come up from ad hoc things that happen, even if they do end up in some of these shows feeding lines. And the amount of line feeding that there'll be really depends on what the show is, right? Like a lot of the cast, like from Survivor, has gone on the record that they don't feed them quite as much, you know, so it really varies across the board.
Yeah, I think I have a similar question, Shams, but I want to kind of like rearrange it because I'm interested in the difference between scripted and unscripted, not in how you classify something as scripted or unscripted, because I feel like that's a pretty clear-cut definition. Mm-hmm. Like scripted shows, there's never been a debate over whether a show belonged in, you know, the unscripted or the reality program category versus the best drama category.
Right.
But what I'm interested in is, what is the difference from a craft standpoint? Like, I think this gets at my underlying question, which is reality TV show or the reality bucket inherently trash? Because I think that's the stigma associated
like
with it.
What are you saying? Like, what is the objective when creating a reality TV show? Like, what are you trying to get from the viewer? What are you trying to give to the viewer, I should say?
And specifically, how do you do it well? So there's some clear things that apply when you're making a scripted series. Certain elements of production, both like pre-production and post-production, matter more or less than if you're making an unscripted show. And I think most of the shows that we wanted to talk about or that came up in our pre-discussion for this, I don't think it's a coincidence that they all fell into the competition category bucket. I think almost all the shows, except maybe Taskmaster, could be a little bit of a debate whether it's actually a competition show or whether it's just a structured reality program. But technically, they give a title. It has a competition element, and they give a prize or title. So I think that's a competition show. And I don't think it's a coincidence that all the ones we brought up that were, and I think the ones we're biggest fans of, all fall in that bucket.
Yeah, I think from that, Zach, to me, there's really three big things. It's casting, editing, and the format. I think especially from these format-driven shows, how you set up, because a lot of what these shows are essentially doing is they're filming a documentary about a game. Especially these competition shows, like the whole thing is about how the game plays out, what occurs in the game, how people get to the end, who wins, looking at the personal nuances and the interactions between them that so many of us find so fascinating, and capturing that on camera and turning it into essentially a documentary that people can consume. So if you look at something like The Mole, let's say from the past, right, where you have a show that you've got someone on the cast is working against everyone else, and the objective of the rest of the cast is to figure out who that person is. And then you get to have all these fantastic interactions between everybody to try to figure out like who is who that person might be based on how everyone else is behaving. Everyone gets to talk about that, and you get to go on the analysis ride along with them as the whole show is edited together. So how it's edited is super critical. Who is cast is super critical, because how they get interacted, how they interact between each other and what those interactions are going to be is partially dictated by who gets put on the cast and what the format is. Because if you have a really boring format or something that people aren't interested in watching, then the whole thing can go to hell real, real quickly. And then, you know, you end up with something that people don't want to watch.
Yeah, I have almost the exact same three words as you. I have casting, I have editing, and I think instead of format, I use the term game design.
Mm-hmm.
Shyam,
did you have anything other than that that you wanted to add?
Nah, I think that hits it all. I sort of want to talk about casting a bit further, but if you want to talk about anything else, you can go ahead first.
Yeah, well, let's go through. I'm very interested to talk about each of these and what makes it good, but let's do it in order of kind of like sequentially how this happens in production. And let's talk about the game design first, or the format. And I think this is where it starts. Like the big difference, as Ben said, is in a scripted show, you are in complete control of the story, and it's your responsibility to come up with the script. It's kind of like the equivalent of the game design is the equivalent of the script in an unscripted series, in a competition program. In a non-competition program, format's probably a better word we should use. So like in something like, you know, Shark Tank and Mythbusters, it's that like how the structure works. And I think this also gets at why out of all these three Emmy categories, there is the fewest shows that appeal to me in the unstructured reality program category. I'll just like say straight up, I read through the entire list of submitted programs for unstructured reality program this year, and it's like literally all the shows that I would consider trash. Like
how many shows was that on the list?
Oh, it was only I forget. It was not that many.
Okay, it wasn't like 100 or something.
Like this isn't like the drama directing categories where there's like 100 plus. But I mean, I literally haven't watched any of them.
I'll be honest too, Zach. Among that set, that's probably the ones I watch the least. I like watching shows typically that have a winner and a loser.
Yeah. And I think that's actually where most of the stereotypical reality like trash television stigma comes from, because if you think about like what are like the okay each of you name the trashiest reality TV show you can think of, like the stereotypical bad reality TV.
Kardashians,
Real Housewives,
both in unstructured. I would also add like Jersey Shore. Mm-hmm. That's in that category. Like all of the trash reality TV is in the unstructured reality program category. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because the structure or the game in a competition is what makes this interesting. Because the difference is in a scripted show, you're coming up with a script and you're coming up with a good story, and then you're casting to execute on telling that story in the most effective way possible.
Right.
What I like about reality TV show is reality, especially competitions, is it's about, you're still telling a story, but it's more about setting up scenarios in which to bring out something interesting from people. And it's a little bit more people driven, which is where we'll talk about casting. But that's the thing, is people are inherently interesting. Like there's a reason like Twitch and YouTube are so popular, and these like live streaming things, because people are just inherently interesting creatures. Some are more interesting than others, which is where casting makes the difference. But I would argue that it's the creativity of coming up with this like machine to put people through that is the format of these shows.
Yeah. The way I see it is that a well-designed show maximizes the ability for human, like the cast or like the individual people to showcase a unique talent that we wouldn't see in real, like in actual real life, right? Like, I think I'll take Top Chef as an example, where Top Chef's a great example of a show where you're seeing people, like, you don't really get to watch like chefs make their make your dinner when you go to a restaurant or whatever. But Top Chef and MasterChef, these shows show, it like lets you kind of peek behind the curtain. And they've designed the shows in a way that there's an excitement in seeing how are they going to make like whatever dish they're supposed to make, and like how is it, like what is it going to get judged on and everything. So I think that it's about maximizing real world, at least for me, what I like is when you maximize a real world skill and you let people showcase that skill that you don't get to see in the real world that often.
I think on the Top Chef topic, I'm not a food person myself. I famously eat like super plain things and really, really would not like enjoy going any of these people's restaurants. But I really enjoy Top Chef because I enjoy watching people compete with things, right, and try to find every edge in these random competitions to figure out how to win. I think it's in Top Chef edits it really well, and they get a lot of great characters. And then they have a format that works because they also have a judging panel that knows how to make good TV at the same time and talk to the audience and say things that make sense to people. And they built a lot of prestige, so they get a lot of good talent to come in to do it. So it's a really interesting machine that they put together there with that.
Yeah, the other example for this one for me is Big Brother, because I think a lot of people are very surprised, given how elitist I am about scripted TV, that I watch Big Brother every year. I've been watching Big Brother every year since season 7, which was, I don't even know how long ago. They would have started season 21 just I think last week if it weren't for the quarantine. But the biggest like thing that I hear is like when people don't know what Big Brother is. That's the thing, is like it sounds like it's like basically like Jersey Shore, but a bunch of people locked in a house and it's just like following people in a house. But it's not. It is showcasing a skill, and that skill is raw social manipulation. There's some like meta format things that they like tweak every year, but arguably most of what they do with like the twists every year just makes the show worse. But the core format of the show, yeah, Ben's laughing because he follows the same podcast where that opinion is popularized. Shout out to Taryn, who's not listening to this, but the actual like core format of the show, it's actually a game. Like there are discrete rules and it follows a weekly format. And the other interesting thing about this one is, you have live feed, so people can actually, if they want to, I don't think either of us actually do this, but we listen to some like podcast recaps from people who do watch the live feeds of the people playing this game. And it's really just like fascinating to hear what's going on in this house because of this like social competition that also has like some physical and like mental elements to it. But for the most part, historically the winners aren't the people with the best physical ability or the best, trivia ability or like that kind of like puzzle solving skill. It's the people who can, you know, muster the most charisma and lie the best to make their way through this inherently social game. That's the big difference between people who understand what the show is and what the show sounds like.
Do you consider that a competition, or is it more like a social experiment?
And that's it's a competition. That's the big thing. Is if you haven't seen it, it sounds experiment.
I get that there's a competitive aspect to it, but are you they've had 21 seasons, right?
Yeah.
Isn't the experiment part the fact that like you think that every season there's going to be something new to this thing? And the reason why it's new is because depending on who you put into the situation, you're going to get different results, which makes it experimental.
Just because I think it'd be helpful for everyone, I think I might go through the format of Big Brother real quick. So you start with 16 people in a house, and each week you pick someone through a competition or other means or random selection or the audience votes or however Big Brother decides to twist it that week. It's normally some competition. They pick someone who is the HOH or head of household. So this one has the most power in the house. So that person picks two people to go up for elimination. There's another competition that happens where the people who are up for elimination and a few other people in the house get a chance to try to save that person. But ultimately, one of the people that that head of household has put up will be voted out at the end of the week. And two or three other people, depending on how it shakes out, will stick around. So it becomes very much a battle of making sure that you aren't, your threat level stays mitigated so that you don't get put up after you put other people up and can still make it all the way through the house through 16 eliminations and be the final person standing. And then at the same time, the last seven, or depending on the season nine, I think it's more nine these days, the last nine people eliminated who aren't in the final two get to pick the winner. So you can't burn anyone too badly and really piss them off. So it becomes a kind of a mix. The person who wins is generally someone who either impresses everybody by the fact that they managed to get through it, or they were really, really liked. So it's not so much a social experiment, because also you have situations like in where the same person made it to the end in season 10 and season 14, but they lost one time and won another time. So, you know, it's depending on how their gameplay went and everything else that was going on in the game. So it really becomes more of a competition, in my opinion, than a purely social experiment. It might've started that way, but now it's more, the game has kind of morphed to become a lot more about gameplay. Survivor's kind of that way too.
So I actually kind of want to that's a good transition to Survivor, because that's, I totally see where you're coming from. And that's maybe where I think I actually lost reality TV for me, was that I loved like the first few seasons of Survivor. Mm-hmm. Like the first season of Survivor is like still one of my favorite seasons of like any television ever. Mm-hmm. And it's because there wasn't really any rules back then, right? And when I say there wasn't any rules, like there wasn't any, the people who were in that show did not understand what that show was supposed to be about, right? They were just following what they were being told from Jeff Probst, but they didn't actually know like, oh, this is how you play the game of Survivor, right? And to me, it was more experimental because it was people literally trying to like just figure out this like unknown uncharted territory, and that was like very exciting for me. But now I think we're on like what, season 20 something, like 22 or whatever.
We're going to go into 41. To put things in perspective, yeah, they just finished their all winner season, so they literally had 20 winners playing against each other, and Crown, who I think is probably the best player ever, won this last season. But that's another story. I'm not spoiling here.
So my thing is that now it's like a game, right? Like Survivor is a game. And I guess for me, I don't necessarily think it's trash to be like that, but I found it to be much more interesting when it was more of an experiment than it was a game.
Well, it was still a game. It was just people didn't have an established meta on right. how to play it, right?
So there was a competitive aspect to it, but because there was no established meta, it wasn't like if you do these things, you'll likely win. Like there was no like likelihood chance of succeeding. Like you didn't know what to do, what action you could take that would improve your chances to win. Other than at that given episode, if I win today's episode's competition, I'm safe. That's like the only thing they knew at the time. They didn't even understand like how to play other people, how to form a line. Like they were trying to figure it out, but there wasn't this like rule set or like guiding principles that they had, right? And I remember everyone was so surprised that Richard won initially, because they thought this dude, in America at least, when watching it, thought this dude in real time was like, how's like this guy just is like weird. He's like, how is he gonna win? And then it was only after he won that we realized, oh, he actually manipulated everyone so much better. But like it took us to watch the whole thing to realize it. Whereas like now I feel like we would instantly recognize that like by episode 2 or episode 3.
I don't really know the format of Survivor as well. So maybe, Ben, could you give me like the quick differences between the Survivor game and the Big Brother game?
Sure. The big difference between these two is where Big Brother, you have a person who is in power from week to week, and everyone is in the collective voting together. In Survivor, what you'll have is you'll have two tribes split up initially, and the entire tribe at the whenever they go to tribal council. So each week, one of the two tribes wins something called immunity. And depending on if they won or not, if they didn't win, they go to tribal council. And the tribe that didn't win, someone votes someone off the island on their tribe. Can be anyone. Where Big Brother, you're kind of dictated by who would be who the head of household is picked. So you're picking between like two or three people, depending on what twist has been thrown in there at that time. Normally two. And then Survivor, you've got everyone to pick from, and you're voting amongst everyone on your tribe. Then eventually everyone merges together. Then you got one big tribe, and then immunity is only protecting one person or sometimes two people at a time, all the way down to you get to the final two or three. And then the jury of anywhere from seven to, for some crazy reason, we've had as much as like 17 in more recent seasons, votes for who the winner is. So,
okay. So it's still the same end game where you need to be liked or respected for your gameplay or personality by the people who you have beaten in the game, which I think is what makes Big Brother repeatable.
But the first season, Richard won mainly because, not because people liked him better, but because they hated the other people more.
I would say they didn't respect Kelly.
Yeah. It was like...
Bitter juries, Ben.
Yeah. Yeah. He found a way not be hated like she did. So then when it came to, and he also like, but the thing is, there's a, in Survivor, technically, if you win every week, you can just get to the final, like you can get to like the last few weeks. Like I think it's almost impossible. Like no one's ever done that, I assume, Ben. I haven't watched all the seasons, but like in theory, if you did a great job in the weekly competition, you could stay safe for like 12 weeks or whatever.
Yeah, there have been a number of seasons where people went down to the end and with lots of competition wins and didn't win. Yeah. Like season two of Survivor, where Tina beat Colby is a good example of that, where Colby won three or four challenges, something like that. Maybe even five. I don't remember the count, but where he went down to the end and then lost to Tina because they liked Tina more.
Right.
And that was the case of Colby had the choice to take Tina or Keith to the end, and he picked Tina, and he should have picked Keith if he wanted to win. But it was also season two, and these people were becoming celebrities, so that was one of those chicken or the egg problem at the same time.
That's my point though, is that if he was in season 10, he probably would have made the better choice at that time. He would have understood what the choice to make is what I'm saying, but he didn't actually know how to play the game in season two because there wasn't an established meta yet. So, and like this is like Zach knows this with video games. Like when you play a new video game and there's no meta, it's like the most fun and exciting time to play that video game. And then when a new
Hearthstone expansion just drops,
and then whenever the meta's established, you're just like, oh. Like the internet starts
writing guides on how to play is when it becomes not fun.
So that's sort of how I feel about this competition aspect of the competitive reality TV show genre, is that whenever I love watching early seasons of these shows, and then when an established meta is made, I tend to lose interest in it.
So I think let's move on shortly, but I have just one more thing to say about Big Brother is the reason I like Big Brother historically and have not gone into Survivor is the exact opposite of what you just said, where in Survivor, it seems like if it's more about the competition, and in Big Brother, it is definitely not the case that you can get to the end just by being good at the competitions. In fact, as Ben knows, one of the most commonly cited best players of all time he was on two seasons and one of them was All Stars. He won season two and then came back for All Stars, and his alliance member won the season, but he made it to final four, and he lost every single competition. never won a competition in two seasons of being on the show.
Through everyone.
Not a single one. Intentionally. Like, he intentionally did not win. And the reason was the meta, I don't think there is an established meta, but at the time, there definitely was not an established meta of like realizing that you should not be winning competitions, because the more competitions you win, the more likely people will want to get rid of you. So it's this like, you have to thread the social line of
right.
having enough power to not leave, but not having too much power, both in terms of competitions and in terms of how you position yourself with alliances in the house. Because if you have an alliance with every single person, you're actually in a bad position, because people will realize that. So it's been a repeatable game, and I think there's still not a super established meta. There are some things that are getting a little stale, and it's definitely been you know, less good in the last couple of seasons. But the key is there's still a huge debate. Like, if you ask me, should you try and win the first competition at all? There's polar opposite opinions in, you know, the online debates about that.
The answer is yes, but okay.
So I think more recently the answer is yes, but originally it was
No. I've been thinking that for a couple seasons here. It lets you get in power and make it and start the alliance, like dictating the alliance structure, because no one wants to go home. So you'll find yourself in the big alliance that lasts for a couple weeks.
Sure. Yeah, in the past couple years, it's definitely evolved that way.
This is not the best transition, but I think the second thing we wanted to, you know, we talked about the format. I think the second most important element is the casting. When it comes to reality.
Here, let me reverse. I'll give you a good transition for that, okay?
Yeah, you give me a good transition.
The other reason Big Brother has gotten worse over the last couple years is the casting. Ben, take it.
Yes. They can't, I'm a transition guy. Can't keep casting racist and misogynist people, you know? Because the live feeds catch everything, you know?
Also, not only that, but people who don't care about it as a game and just care because they just want to be on TV and gain Instagram followers.
Yeah, no more actors. Yeah. Just cast fans. Like, Survivor started doing that, and the game got way better. Like, you gotta just cast fans, because then the fans realize the game against everyone else. And it's a zero sum game, and that's when it's really fascinating, because they're really trying to outthink each other. So that's when it really gets exciting.
I agree completely. I think the early 2010s saw this. I think it's maybe getting better now, but the early 2010s definitely saw this, where the contestants on these reality TV shows were using this as like, I am only here to launch whatever platform career I want to have after this, right? Like, they were not focused on the actual objective of the show, right? Many of them were just like, how can I become famous after this? Because we made so many celebrities out of the people who originally were on these shows. So I hate that. I mean, I think we all can agree. We all hate that.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. Social media made this format way worse.
Anyone who's on a hit reality TV show, they instantly get like 500,000 followers on Instagram or Twitter or whatever. And they just have like a base following, and they can literally for the rest of their life just try to milk that one show as much as they can. And it's just creates just, to me, boring people on these shows. Like, they're not interesting. And it doesn't even, I'm not even talking about competitive. Like, even, I mean, I guess dating shows is competitive.
I think they're the ones who are milking Instagram, to be honest with you. It's not that way for all of these contestants, but it's pretty common to see these bachelorette contestants get like 500,000 followers. I agree, but some of them, like the Big Brother ones, they might get 60,000 if they're lucky.
Great British Bake Off people get a lot.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, they have a talent. Like, they were on that show because they have some genuine talent in baking, but like a lot of those contestants have just become like niche stars, but they're still like able to like create a following. In my opinion, I don't know if you guys watched the Great British Bake Off, but like the first two seasons of that I thought were like phenomenal, and then like afterwards it's like become like just kind of somewhat boring and stale to me. But I think with the dating shows, like, I enjoyed the first season of Bachelor. I really loved Joe Millionaire. I don't know if I'm sure Ben's seen that. But I'm
long time ago.
But like, I love the early seasons of reality show because like, I honestly believe that the people there were actually looking to like find someone to fall in love with, right? And now it's like 99% of the people on a reality TV dating show are just there to get famous. And it makes it so difficult to watch those shows.
Yeah, I think it depends on the show. Like if you've got something like Survivor and you know, listen to a lot of the cast interviews and stuff like that, a lot of these people tend to actually be like very successful in their lives in various things. Like they've had a couple MBA students on there. It's quite a smart group, especially in more recent days. I agree. In like the teen season, they were casting like Mactors galore and what would be like today's influencers. But it really depends on the show that you look at because, some of them like, you know, Bachelor, I'd say is probably more falls in that category, but a lot of these competition reality shows, it's hit or miss.
Yeah. Do you think that casting is, I don't know if we want to do this, but do you think a show can succeed with bad casting in a great format, or can it succeed with a great cast in a bad format?
You can, but you'll get a lot of hate watchers if the format's bad and the cast if the casting is bad and the format's good.
Yeah.
I think you really need both.
I think you need both, but I feel that format's more important because I think people can either love a cast or hate a cast, but they can still hate watch if they hate the cast. Whereas like the format, if it's just a bad format, I just feel like people won't tune into it.
Yeah, I think maybe The Mole is a good example for that because I really am not, like, I can't even name half of the people that's on a good half note. Of
that,
the seasons.
Yeah, that's a great, yeah. No, like they all sucked.
I don't remember, like, the people other than, like, The Mole and maybe some of the winners, but I remember...
Dennis Rodman.
I remember vividly some of the competitions that they did on that
that's
show.
That's the same with Fear Factor, too.
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah. That's a good example where I don't think the cast matters at all.
Yeah. So I think format is more important in the end. Casting, because I think hate watching is such a viable option in reality TV that like even if you screw up the casting, people can still find enjoyment in just hating the person that they've casted in the show.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the show as well, because I think using like the Big Brother example and also like a more recent example with The Circle, that's a show that really does depend on the cast being interesting. I think, especially comparing the British seasons of The Circle to the Netflix series that just came out last January, the British ones were much more interesting when it's literally the exact same format. In fact, I think they actually borrowed some of the exact, I don't know, like mini games, I'd call them. Basically, like they essentially cloned the exact first season. I think it was shorter, like there were fewer episodes, but it was the same thing with most of the same twists between the UK season and the Netflix American season.
Yeah.
But the difference was the people who were on it, and the UK, the people on the UK series, and like what they were there for and what they were doing, and the combination of people who were there for you to hate watch and people you were completely rooting for made that much more entertaining for me at least.
Yeah. I think that they used the same production company and set for both of those, right? Like the American one was filmed in England or is somewhere in Great Britain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can see the rooms are the same. Even the decorations between season two of the UK one and the Netflix season are mostly still the same. For those of you who aren't aware, the circle's format is not that complicated, and I think this will be a good segue into what I think makes it good, which is the editing. So the circle's format is kind of Big Brother-ish, except instead of people being locked in a house together playing a social manipulation game, the circle, everyone is locked in their individual apartments and don't actually get to interact with each other face to face. Instead, they can only text message one another. But the key thing that they did really well with this is you would think a show about people trying to, you know, win friends by texting one another and make alliances that way would be not very watchable. But they do it through this like voice interface where you don't actually like type. Sorry, I hit my mic there. You don't type your message to the person. You have to say it out loud to quote unquote the computer. It's probably just a production person typing it out for you. But the point is they make you say it out loud and then they send it to the person and it appears on the screen in the other person's apartment. But because of that, they edit it together in a way that's really clever, both interweaving like people thinking about their messages and like giving their commentary on like what they intend for, you know, what they're trying to do to like trick the person into trusting them or something. But they also interweave it. So like when the conversation starts flowing, they just cut back and forth between people saying the messages and it almost sounds like they're talking to one another. And it's so watchable. A show that does not sound watchable at all is the most addicting watchable show, at least for January on Netflix.
Yeah. It's funny to watch them spell out emojis, like just saying eggplant emoji out loud and things like that. Yes. It was very, it got heart very amusing. Said. Yeah. Well, yes.
I think editing is hard. For me, it's hard to talk about reality TV because like, it's the one that we know the least about because like, we don't like, we're not watching the like 100 hours of footage that they have. Right.
So well, that's the thing. The case study is Big Brother because some people
aren't. Fair. Case study is Big Brother.
And there's big debate over the editing on that show.
Big Brother's great because they can't edit the winner. Like all these other shows, after watching so many hours of reality TV, sometimes it's pretty easy to pick out the winners. Like it really is. Like you just watch the TV show and you're like, oh, that person's going to win. You know, they're getting complex personality content. Their visibility is middle of the road and then it's peaking. And, you know, all those, anyone who's familiar with Survivor Edgic, editing and logic, there's a whole community that's just around basically reading the edit of Survivor and trying to pick who the winner is. And they're right half the time because sometimes it's just super easy. There's only so many ways to edit a winner of reality TV and get the audience to like them. So depending on the show, it varies. Yeah, I think I like the ones like Big Brother where the winner hasn't been picked yet, so they literally can't edit to a winner.
So, but do you think it's good? Like, do you consider that a flaw of Survivor then? That like it you can actually figure out who wins by the editing, or you think it's actually like good story? Because like in my view, they're trying to like tell a story, right? And like the way to tell a story, like they can't if they know this person's gonna win. Then they know they have to like, they want to lead the audience from like point A to point B, right? Mm-hmm. And so to me, that's like the logic behind it. But to your point, it's now come to the point where like you'll figure out who's won because of that. So do you think that's a flaw or is just like that's just the nature of what it's going to be when you have a pre-taped winner?
When they do a really good job of it, it's fascinating. Because if they make it so they've edited the show, so there can be 5 or 6 winners. Like, there's no way they can make it so there's 20 winners.
Right.
But if they can edit the show so that there's 5 or 6 winners, like season 33 is the last example I can think of with this, where they did a really good job, where there were probably like 3 or 4 people who could have won and really weren't sure which one it was going to be. But more recent seasons, it's been pretty easy to point to it and like, yeah, that person's winning.
You could also argue, though, on the flip side of that, Big Brother has a flaw because they can't do that. Because there's a very often in Big Brother, like I think what makes a good Big Brother season compared to like a not so interesting one is in the non-interesting ones, there are periods of, you know, even like 3 to 4 weeks almost, because the show goes on for like 3.5 months. And you could have a third of the show basically be like watching the, you know, the pendulum swing in the way you know it's going to go. And it's just like a slow, like death march to, you know, some big alliance that's controlling the house is just slowly picking players off. And there's no interesting story to tell for 3 weeks. And there's nothing the producers can do about it because they, you know, they're editing and airing the show based on what actually happened in the house. Usually it's within the past 3 to 4 days at least. And the circle, that was another big difference between the UK version and the American version, is the Netflix version was all pre-taped. So you had a very clear winner's edit. Whereas the UK circle, you couldn't watch live feeds, but the what was going on in the house, I think the lag time between when they aired footage of it and revealed the person who was eliminated, I think it was only a couple days. So it was also similarly like almost live. So there wasn't really like, they were definitely having to tell a story as it was playing out with only a little bit of lag time to figure out how they wanted to tell the story, which is what is kind of impressive about the editing on some of these shows.
Yeah, I think I agree with Ben that to me, the ideal scenario is a pre-taped, if we're talking, it doesn't even have to be a competition, but like pre-tape idea, but that you use the editing to present multiple possibilities that each have an equal chance.
Yeah, and the mole is a great example of that because they don't care about the winner edit, they care about the mole edit. So I don't think we fully explain the format of the mole, and it's no longer on the air in the United States, but back in the day, Anderson Cooper was the host of a show called The Mole, which ran for 2 seasons in the United States. It was originally a Belgian show, and it was also super popular in the Netherlands. It was never canceled in the Netherlands, so they're about to be on season 21, which was scheduled to air later this fall. And I've been watching a lot of it with Dutch subtitles, and it's absolutely great. But the general, just the format is, it's a standard show where everyone's, you know, doing things and competing in challenges to win money for the group's, they call it the group's pot. And they can win or occasionally lose money from it. But one of them is not actually trying to win money. One of them is the mole, who is secretly trying to make them lose. And the audience doesn't know who the mole is. So part of the fun of this is you're trying to figure out who is the mole, which is the title of the show in the Netherlands. So instead of like editing it, like no one really cares about the winner. The audience is all about trying to analyze what's happening in the edit and figure out who the mole is. And that's where the editing is very challenging because you have to present multiple possible moles. So they, in some challenges, they might focus on how one person, you know, intentionally slowed down in a race somewhere, something, or how this other contestant in another area like dropped something that was like critical to them solving a puzzle. And it's all about that. It's like showing like these subtle things that could make anyone the mole.
Yeah, I think they're going to get a reboot soon. I think I've seen a lot of...
in the U.S.?
Yeah. Maybe not in this year or next year, but in the next few years, I bet they do. Because I've seen a lot of traffic about people excited about them all in different channels. So
yeah, part of that is probably...
I wouldn't be surprised if it comes back.
Part of that's the YouTube community, and there's some very nice people in Amsterdam and one in Belgium who is manually subtitling things in English so we could watch it.
That's nice of them.
Another part of that is the Belgian series was just rebooted, so they've had 2 new seasons recently. And the Netherlands one is obviously there every year, but the editing on the Belgian one is actually much better. They do a lot of really cool like overlay things to like explain the competitions. Like they use a lot of drone footage, and then they do like this very like Mission Impossible, James Bond-esque overlays that kind of like will show like lines to illustrate like the group is trying to get from here to like the top of this mountain. And meanwhile, that's overlaid on top of a big drone shot, which also makes it really easy to follow what's going on, even though they're speaking Flemish.
On the topic of subtitled reality TV shows, the one I've got to recommend for everyone out there is to watch The Genius. It's a South Korean reality TV show. It's very interesting because their shows go on a lot longer. So these are like hour and a half long subtitled episodes that you're watching. But it's the guy who did a really good job. The shows have fantastic winners and lots of social intrigue and voting people out while at the same time like outwitting them in games. So it's a lot of fun. If anyone out there is interested, I have to do a plug for that one. You can go to the Genius Reddit, and they've got links to how to watch.
So nice. I think that's a good transition. I think, you know, I actually wanted to ask Ben what his current picks of, shows are exist, running right now, with his top 3 picks that he would pick for people to watch. So I guess you can use that as one of them, but what would be 2 others?
Are you talking about for reality specifically? For reality, or do you reality. Want to, okay. Because I also want to ask our final question. No,
we'll do the final question. I want to get specific. I want to get the subject matter expert on what people should be watching today in terms of reality television.
The Challenge, I would say. The Challenge is unique. It's on MTV. It's actually been running longer than Survivor, believe it or not, since like 98, I think it is. Yeah. Don't quote me on that. But they're on season 35 right now. And it's unique in that they keep a semi-consistent cast, but change up the format every time. So, and they also pull their casting from other reality TV shows. So a lot of Big Brother people have been recycled on The Challenge, and people will go like 5, 10, 20 seasons on this show. And they play to win $1 million. So it's pretty fun. It is a little more challenge focused and people playing to play in multiple seasons and having Twitter fights with each other and, you know, all that good stuff. So, it's a fun one to watch. Other reality shows, there are two upcoming that I'm looking forward to watch. There's one, it aired in the UK, but it's going to, air here on CW also, I think. It's called Killer Camp. It looks like, there was a show from a while ago called Whodunit, which only ran one season. It's on YouTube. I highly recommend everyone check it out who hasn't seen it. It was a fantastic show. And it looks a lot like that, where it's one of those, like, you got a killer, or like a mole where someone's the killer among everyone. Okay, we got to figure out who it is. So that looks like a fun one. And Phil Kogan, who does The Amazing Race, he's got one called Tough as Nails coming up on, I think it's CBS. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that type of stuff. Now, is this where we talk about scripted too, or just the reality?
I wanted to end because we never actually wrapped up the initial question. Okay. So after all of this discussion, I think I know where Zach and I stand to some extent, but what is your take? I assume you don't consider reality TV to be trashy.
Some of it is.
So to you, reality TV, it's just about how you execute it. It's not naturally designed to be trash.
Well, I would say a lot of it's fluff TV. Like sometimes when we're doing other stuff, like we'll turn on some HGTV show or like Guy's Grocery Games or some other, you know, Food Network show. Like I was a big fan of Cutthroat Kitchen way back when because it was like super strategic, I thought, for like, you know, how you used your money and tried to, you know, beat the other people while combining skill into it. You know, so I don't think it's trash. I think most of this have like, you know, some redeeming value. I think for like, in my case, I really like it more if there's some competition aspect attached to it.
Yeah, I would honestly, after this discussion, I have a much more favorable view of reality TV than I had before we started talking. So yeah.
It's like someone taped a sport and then it's just not a sport.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, there's a lot of trash out there. And I think that's because the quantity of reality TV is just absurd. Mm-hmm. But if you watch the good ones, it's hard to call it trash. It may not be, I still may prefer scripted dramatic television in most cases, but I think I'd be lying if I said a show, like, you know, The Mole or Survivor when at their peak is trash television, because I think that's actually great television.
I mean, I don't think any season of The Mole has been trash television. But at the same time,
there have been some trash seasons of Survivor.
Yeah, and Big Brother as well. And The Circle is trash, but
Nine.
It's also
Never
very good.
Big Brother 9.
To me, if there's a redeeming quality to it, I don't really consider it trash.
I have to say The Circle is trash, but it's also brilliant. It's both genius and trash, and that's part of the genius of it.
Like, Real Housewives to me is trash.
I can
understand finding some enjoyment and just watching like the absurdity of it, but it's always trash. It's never actually good.
Well, that's when it starts creeping into like soap opera territory, right? The second there stops being stakes, then you're like in soap opera territory. Like, you know, initially The Challenge, for instance, pulled contestants from the real world and they were recycling real world contestants. But I'd never watched The Real World because it's just, you know, people in a house and it just becomes like soap opera stuff. And I've got limited tolerance for that versus like, say, I enjoyed X on the Beach a little bit better because they actually eliminated people along the way.
We just like shows where people lose. That's it.
Because then there's stakes. It's interesting. Like, who's going to go home? I don't know. You know,
if there's someone you don't like that you can root for them to lose, then there will always be some redeeming factor there, unless they win.
Great. All right.
That would be sad.
Yeah. Or I hated Bachelor in every instance that the show has happened, except for Bachelor Pad, which was fantastic because they eliminated people and kind of got to a winner at the end. You know, it's crazy, this stuff sometimes.
I think we just figured out what makes reality TV competitions at least successful. Yeah. It's the same as
people
sports.
Love competitions.
You get to root for people you like to win, and you get to root for people you don't like to lose.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's brilliant. Okay. Well, let's wrap up with, I didn't tell Ben this, so you don't have to go first, but we always end with two questions. What's the best thing you've watched recently? We're going back into scripted for this. Something you're looking forward to. So I could go otherwise. Sean, do you have something? Otherwise,
yeah, I watched the first episode of HBO's Perry Mason, which stars Matthew Rice from The Americans. It's a remake of an old show. And it's like one of those like classic like 1950s noir type detective type of shows. I really dig that genre a lot, and those type of stories within it. So I like it. I actually don't, and I really like Matthew Rice, just because I think he's a great actor. I don't know though, if you don't like Matthew Rice and you don't like that type of detective genre, I don't think you'd actually enjoy this show. But if you like any of those two things, I think it's a great show to watch right now.
Yep, I'm caught up on it, so I've seen I think three episodes.
Wait, was that going to be your pick? Because I'm sorry if I picked yours.
No, it's not, because I try not to pick things that are not over, like the season's not over. But I'll just say with episode two, you get another big hitter with Tatiana Maslany.
Oh, nice.
And she's very good in the show. I don't really know where it's going as a whole yet. But it's been pretty good. It also takes place in LA, so I have a bit of closeness to it, me and the other billions of people who live here. But anyway, is there something you're looking forward to that's coming up?
I don't even
know. Is anything actually coming up?
I don't know what's coming up. Like, everything's been like, the schedule right now is kind of up in the air. Like, so I don't even know what's coming up.
Yeah, actually, there isn't anything. Yeah, I'm looking at my app and I don't see anything.
No, that's what we talked about reality TV, because I think I may have to watch some reality TV to now fill in this void.
Yeah, I just have a
we can cherry pick the best seasons that there have ever been for you if you want.
Yeah,
and you can avoid the trash.
That's what I feel like I have to do now.
Yeah.
But Zach, yeah. If Shams is gonna watch Big Brother, which season should we send him to?
7.
Yeah, I'd agree. That was the first season I watched. That's All Stars. I'd go 7, then 14.
That's ten's all right too. It's pretty, good natured fun most of the time.
Is that Dan's original season? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah. I think that makes sense. To understand 14, you probably have to have seen 10.
I'd go 7, 10, 14, 16.
Which one's 16?
Derek.
Oh, okay, yeah. Although that one was widely considered to be relatively boring. That's the thing.
Because Derek controlled every step of the game.
Yeah. Okay. So my answer, back on the scripted series. Well, I guess actually unscripted. I've finally finished the final 9th season of Taskmaster. So since quarantine started, I've seen 9 seasons of Taskmaster.
There you go.
Another great, definitely non-trash reality. I'd call it a structured reality program with a completely fake competition. There is a competition, but it's like basically. Not really. They're not really competing. It's just a bunch of people trying to be funny, but they're professional comedians, so they actually succeed. As far as scripted goes, what did I just watch? So plug for perhaps the first good show on Apple TV Plus. Shams, I told you about this already. Mythic Quest Raven's Banquet. One of the worst titles of all time. I think it's intentionally awful. But this is basically the creators of Always Sunny in Philadelphia made a Silicon Valley-esque show that's about the video game industry. So it stars Rob McElhenney, creator and star of Always Sunny, as a video game creative director. And there's a lot of cool stuff. There's a really great one-off episode. And most interestingly, they did a quarantine special episode, which is very good. Probably the best thing, the best of any like TV series that has done something specifically around the coronavirus shutdown. I think it was obviously all shot from webcams and stuff. And it was a really good, one of the most powerful episodes of the show. It's both funny and some of the episodes are actually good dramas as well. And as far as looking forward to, yeah, there's not much coming up.
I have a new looking forward to, because the trailer came out. It's not coming out until 2021. But since she's talking about Apple TV, Apple TV is making a Foundation TV series based off Isaac Asimov's works, and they released a trailer for it. And it's probably the first Apple TV series I'm actually excited for.
Yeah, I guess we can say we're looking forward to TV coming back in 2021.
Yeah, that's what else have we got?
There you go.
Ben, do you have anything on the scripted side? Best thing you've watched recently?
Well, the ones that I'm watching pretty regularly right now, I think The 100's pretty fantastic. I think it's turned into Stargate at this point, which is really good.
I've heard the recent seasons have changed because that show was bordering on trash for whenever I left it, which was probably season five.
I think season five kind of went every which way. Season four, it was kind of meh. Season three and two were kind of meh. I think season six and seven especially have been riveting television, at least for me. So
that's a standard for CW shows. Amazing incredible first season, a bunch of content, and then it finds its way back, and then it becomes and then it ends on a high note. That's like every CW show.
Incredible first season is generous for every CW show.
I would say
I watch a lot of CW shows because they're not, you don't think that hard.
Very digestible content. Right.
The story's pretty self-evident. Yeah. Sometimes there's shock value.
I'm actually totally down to do an entire episode on CW shows as a genre.
Put me on for that one. I've watched a lot of them. The other one I was going to say, another CW show, Stargirl, is surprisingly really good.
I need to actually watch that. Everyone keeps saying that.
It's great. It's really, from my understanding, I haven't read the comic books for Stargirl, but it's really close to the source material from my understanding. So, but like, it's been really good. So, I don't have anything bad to say about it. I keep coming back. So, there's a lot of these shows that I just stop watching, almost immediately. I watch one or two episodes, say, that's boring. I don't want to watch that. But those, they've kept me. So, hey. What can I say? So I watch those in The Challenge right now, mostly.
All right.
For listeners who can't see the video, I've basically just been frowning for the past 2 minutes. I honestly think CW might actually be worse as a whole than reality.
I will defend CW.
We'll fight you on that one.
You also defend the Fast and the Furious. Take Sean's opinion with a grain of salt.
I want to spend an entire episode on Supernatural and talk about how it's one of the most insane runs ever in TV.
It is pretty insane. I haven't watched a ton of it, but I've watched a lot of the superhero stuff, especially. Yeah, and
I love
all that. I want to say is Arrow might be the worst show that I've watched more than one season of.
Arrow, okay, because the first two seasons of Arrow are amazing, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Awful. And I heard they got worse, which makes it even funnier.
It did eventually get worse, like all CW shows eventually get. But the first two seasons were
so bad.
Amazing. Incredible.
It's kind of hit or miss. If you thinking back to old shows, seasons of 24, sometimes you got a good one, sometimes you got a bad one.
Yeah,
Lost. 24 is just a big blur to me anyway.
No, odds were great 24. Seasons, evens were F seasons. 1, 3, 5 were fantastic, and 2 and 4 were
All right, well, we're slightly over time and way off topic, so shall we wrap up?
Yeah.
I gotta say what I'm looking forward to. Big Brother 22, supposedly an all-star season is coming here.
In 2021?
Well, no, they're it's rumored to start while people are in quarantine, so we'll have something to watch either in July or August. It's they're very, very heavy rumors. So
I unsubscribe from the subreddit during off season, so I don't know the latest on that. That I'd be excited for that.
Yeah. So it seems very likely. So I give it more than 50% shot that we end up seeing Big Brother 22. So I'm looking forward to that. It'd be All Stars 2 is what they're saying.
All right. Which that could be yeah. interesting.
We'll see. We'll see who the All Stars are. But you know, that's a very broad term sometimes with Big Brother.
Yeah, there will be some stars.
Some stars.
Not all stars. All right. That's all we have. Shams, do our usual outro.
That's all. I don't even remember.
For some reason, I was hoping you'd actually try and come up with something. All right. That's all, everyone. Give us, you know, a star or two. I don't know. Subscribe.
Two and a half.
Oh, we actually had someone actually wrote a review.
Right?
Someone actually wrote a review on Apple. I don't know how Spotify works, but we have a 5-star rating on Apple.
So. What's up?
Everyone, make sure to lower that. Give us a couple 1 or 2-star reviews. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thanks. Bye.